Sometimes you got to do things you don't want to.
Why?
Because your parents say so, and it's part of your tradition. But I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about your confirmation here.
I don't want to get confirmed.
Why not?
Don't matter why not. If you're looking for a purpose in life, do what's right as your purpose.
That's not what Nietzsche says.
Who?
Nietzsche.
Let me tell you something. Nietzsche wound up talking to his horse. And I know what you're going to tell me. Sartre, right? Well, Sartre was a fraud. He copped it all from Husserl and Heidegger. Go on. You should start at the beginning. Take a look at Kierkegaard.
Whatever.
Hey, Kierkegaard said, every duty is essentially duty to God.
Nigga be a leader, not a follower.
What?
Master P said that.
Uh-huh. I did it again. What's up, right?
I know. Cedric Muhammad.
I know what y'all is asking yourself. You gonna ever fall off?
Cedric Muhammad.
No. A lot of speculation on the monies I've made. Honey's
Cedric Muhammad.
How is he for real? Is that really paid? Monsters I've met or dealt with direct. Is it true he stayed in beef and slept with a tech? With the position you hold, can you really match a triple platinum artist buck by buck, but only a single going gold? Rockefeller's foe, and you left out in the cold. Is it back to charge your motherfuckers 11 for a hoe? For the millionth time, asking me questions like Wendy Williams harassing me. They get upset
Cedric
when
Muhammad.
I get feelings. Can I get a minute to breathe? And in that minute you leave, while I'm looking at my roll, ice spinning on my sleeve. Nice watch. Do you really have a spot? Like you said in front of foe, and if so, what block? What you doing in L.A. with Filipinos and essays? Latinos and Chevys down by Pico with Federico. I answer all y'all questions, but then y'all got to go.
Cedric
and the
Muhammad.
Question I ask you is, how bad you want to know? Black.
Knowledge, wisdom, and understanding. Only on the Cedric Muhammad and Black Coffee Program. Cedric Muhammad.
Yes, August 12th. 12th with an F. 2009. Hold on, let me explain some of the whackness that may be occurring in my name today. 400. Let me count them. 1, 2, 3, 400 pages of my forthcoming book proofed in 3 days. Read it all. Every single page edited. This is what you call the final proofing process. A book, be it the will of Allah, will be out September 22nd. So get ready. Will the show take on a new direction, perhaps, as we go deeper into human motivation and entrepreneurship? No disrespect to any whacktivists, or pardon me, activists out there who want to continue down the road of civil rights. You already got my full support. But can we chew bubblegum and walk, as they say, at the same time? Got more business to cover, more ground to walk. Speaking of which, if you were in Northwest DC last night and you saw two cats from Jersey, or you heard Jersey accents, that was me and my man, the R. Rasan, one of my childhood friends, is in town. If you are RU representative of the Thoroughborough, you lived on Bush campus at Rutgers, you know what this is. Ben's Chili Bowl. I tried to tip in Ethiopian birr. It's the currency of choice. Captain's Log. I got a lot I want to get into today. Very geopolitical in nature. I'll explain why. I want to talk about my, some say controversial blog essay about Dambisa Moyo, the queen from Zambia. That is up at CedricMuhammad.com. I want to talk about the invasion of Panama. 20-year anniversary, the invasion of Panama. One of the greatest events in geopolitical history. So I want to move you a little bit out of the left-right political confines into a more universal and geopolitical worldview. We'll talk about the invasion of Panama and the Panama Canal, something that I'd like to get into much more thoroughly in December, which will be the official date. Next, very important guest, Jasiri X, scheduled to join us later. And I have accused many out there of slowing down in the 08 and the 09 due to the recession. Our brother Jasiri is one person who has sped up, accelerated his game. We'll talk to him a little later. Jasiri X, many of you all are familiar with him. Iran, the currency, not necessarily the protesters. By the way, why has everyone forgotten about what's going on in Iran? Is that a coincidence? This is what I mean about the 24-hour news cycle. You can't get anything in terms of what's going on in Iran. And this reminds me of what happened in 2006. Some of you may remember the invasion of Lebanon by Israel. Breaking news. That is when we first started to see the breaking news headline used ad nauseum. That was the birth of it, the invasion of Lebanon. Don't hear anything about that. Be careful about getting caught up in that 24-hour news cycle. But the issue in Iran is the currency. Now, if anything brings down Ahmadinejad or Ahmadinejad, it will be that. It will be that. Talk about that a little bit later. Cory Booker. Cory Booker, very controversial figure. I like him. A lot of people don't trust him, partly because of what I'm calling the crisis of the black intellectual. Some of that rubs off into black politicians. Cory Booker on Meet the Press. I may run the audio on that. You know it. T.O. Man, is this my favorite show now or what? Tiny and Toya had a great program. I'll talk about that. But T.O., I'm actually going to defend T.O.'s right. Listen to what I'm saying carefully. I'm going to defend T.O.'s right to date a Caucasian woman if that's what he wants to do. May surprise you, my defense. I'm going to defend T.O. He has the right to do that. Talk about that. I'll explain why. I may even use part of the Muslim program to make my case. You may be shocked. There was a great discussion on the trip in Africa that Hillary Clinton just made before it happened on Al Jazeera. I want to run through that, break down a little bit of what's really going on in the United States foreign policy debate over relating to Africa. Trichina worm, whatever you want to say. We want to talk about that. The pork tapeworm. And why I love the Orthodox Jewish community, because they will go to war to get that out of their food. Maybe you will agree with them after you hear what I have to say. Some audio from Noriel Rabini, the Dr. Doom, the great economist who foresaw all this. Whether he thinks we're headed deeper or getting out of the depression. Okay, last week after the show ended, I had to run out of here to make a program. The Smithsonian Institute had a very interesting program on the invasion of the Panama Canal, Panama, hosted by a person of Panamanian descent, as they say, that I was not aware of, the great Juan Williams of Fox News. So Juan, who's on our mailing list for Black Electorate for years, came, hosted the program. I thought it was interesting. A lot of Panamanians that were there had a differing view of that was expressed about whether the invasion of Panama was a good or bad thing on balance. A lot of pain. I think that program may be online. Some tears, a lot of tears shed actually over the question of whether that invasion was appropriate or not. This was at the National Museum of the American Indian. This is the year of Panama over at the Smithsonian. On stage conversation, let me give you a little bit of the blurb. In December of 1989, the United States military launched Operation Just Cause, the invasion of the Republic of Panama that succeeded in its goal of toppling the government of Manuel Noriega. 20 years later, journalist Juan Williams of National Public Radio, Betty Brannon Juan, La Prensa de Panama, and journalism professor John Dinges of Columbia University and a former NPR foreign editor discussed this. So the admission was free. I was in attendance. After the program, I walked up to Juan Williams, thanked him for coming, and then we started to compare notes family lineage about how this happened. Now, it's a slight outside possibility Juan Williams may be a cousin of mine. That's right. Juan Williams, conservative commentator, punching bag, formerly punching bag for Brit Hume. Just playing his part. Nothing wrong with subordination. We talked about this is a great business principle. Subordination. Juan Williams does it well. Every Sunday, Fox News Sunday program. If you want a case study in subordination, watch Juan Williams. You entrepreneurs out there, you professionals trying to rise the corporate ladder, hitting glass ceilings. You're not perhaps subordinating yourself properly. I might dare say that next to the great Ed McMahon, there may be no greater practitioner of subordination than Juan Williams. You feel me? So it turns out that Juan Williams' family kind of did the reverse of mine in terms of coming to Panama. Now, the way it works in my family, let me give you some visual aids so you can follow this. Right there, that's the flag of Barbados. If I've hit the right button, that is where my grandmother, my mother's mother, that's where her family is from, Barbados. They came to Panama to work on the Panama Canal. Yeah, go run, so tell somebody we're talking about, it's Western Hemisphere right now. All you Pan-Africanists that forget about Haiti, Cuba, Panama, Colombia. No. You're not going to jump over the Caribbean to be a militant cultural nationalist in Africa. It's all one family. So the flag, Barbados, that's my grandmother's side of the family. My mother's mother from Barbados. Now, yeah, drink that in. By the way, how's our coverage of Barbados? I don't know. Maybe we need to step up our coverage of Barbados at blackelectorate.com. Get you better acquainted with my maternal grandmother's side of things. Okay, boom. So they come, a lot of people from Barbados came to work on the Panama Canal. And if you have this history in your family, please send a comment in, let me know. I'm building up to something as it relates to President Bush and President Reagan and U.S. foreign policy toward the Panama Canal. Okay, let me go run see my grandfather's side of the family. Now, my grandpa, he used to talk like this. He used to call, he had a strong accent, speak French. He used to call my brother and I the fellas. My brother's name's Anthony. He used to call him Anthony and Cedric. Now, he is from Jamaica. Boom, there goes the Jamaican flag right there. Get it down, get it emblazed in your memory. The Jamaican flag. Now, this is my grandfather, my mother's father. Now, the Jamaicans came real deep. I mean, the Jamaicans may have been the deepest posse to come work on the Panama Canal. I don't know, some of you all that are even in Kingston right now, tell me, were the Jamaicans the deepest posse to come work on the Panama Canal? Somebody can run the numbers on population figures. So that's grandpa right there. He's a doctor. Very prominent doctor. Saxophone player as well. Some of you all heard me talk about my grandfather. Both my grandfather and grandmother deceased. Boom. So this is how my family did it. We represent the merger of Barbados and Jamaica in the country of Panama. So keep looking on your screen, those of you that can do this now. Let's go to Panama now. Panama. Boom. No, that's the canal. Hold on. Easy. Hitting wrong buttons. Brother Charles, where you at? Ooh, Cameron from Paterson, New Jersey, who might be the executive producer of this program one day if I have my way. Boom. There it goes. Panamanian flag right there. You know what I mean? Cuba, Panama, Puerto Rico, you know, this color scheme is similar. Okay, so the Jamaicans and my grandmother's family from Barbados, boom, we came to Panama, worked on the canal. Now, let me show you how gully it got. you were getting paid in, if you were black, or I would say maybe darker complexioned, working on the Panama Canal, if you were black, you got paid in silver. How gangster is that? You got paid in silver. You were black working on the Panama Canal. Others got paid in gold. Okay, work with me now. All this is building up to a point. So Juan Williams, he said, oh, Juan told me, he says, oh, your family did the reverse of mine. Because my mother was born in Panama. She's the product of the Jamaican-Barbados merger. My mother was actually born in Panama. So Juan Williams, he said, oh, no. Different situation. My mother was born in Panama. Juan Williams' parents were born in Jamaica, then came to Panama. So I told my mother, you know what I mean? That's right. Juan may be a cousin, y'all. We're going to get to the bottom of this. Juan Williams. Now, let me just say something real important to me on a personal level, and it gets to my mission. As my white Slavic male listeners in Alaska have crowned me as a killer humanist. They say I take killer humanist positions. Well, let me explain something. I could care less about left-right nonsense in one respect. Yeah, this cousin Juan right there. I can't, you could not get me to attack a black person on the basis of whether they're on the left or the right. I can disagree with their positions, but I won't. Now, here's Juan Williams. He's obviously on the right. I question how thoroughly sometimes. But nonetheless, he does a good job of representing that view sometimes. But he has a strong longing and connection to his people in Panama that he wants to express and convey. Now, how many of you all would say, Juan Williams, no, you can't come to this event because you are a Republican? That's how stupid and manipulated some of us have become. We will judge you in 2009 as a black man or woman in terms of your political ideology rather than that in the context of your historical and cultural struggle. I don't do that. I don't participate in that. I can disagree with Juan Williams on countless issues, and I do. But if there's a black man or woman and they want to connect with their culture and their history, I don't ask them to tell me whether you are a card-carrying Democrat or a Republican. Are you kidding me? Get out of here. Hell no. So some of you disagree, no problem. You're still family, you want to send that a comment in, no problem. But perhaps the way to get someone like Juan Williams on board is to speak to him about the geopolitical maneuver that was pulled on the people of Panama, the indigenous population, so-called Indians, as well as the darker-skinned people. So Juan Williams may be a card-carrying Republican when it comes to U.S. politics, but when you bring up Panama, you may find him to be on the left. So watch out now. Go over and tell somebody, I am defending Juan Williams' embrace of Panama. On top of a DJ Premier B. Now, so we'll get to the bottom of it with some DNA. I might have to go to the Mormons. There's a lot of black folks running around that do the genetic testing, but I hear nobody does it any better than the Mormons. Gladys Knight, I see you. Ooh. Let me read something on the Panama Canal real quick, and then I want to play some audio. This is just from an operational standpoint. Let me give you a little bit of an image of the Panama Canal. Not so, just a map. Just get your geography straight. Yeah, I'm the product of the Barbados-Jamaican merger that took place in Panama. Gave birth to the woman with the most beautiful dark skin, my mom. Anybody knows my mom, that skin is thick and rich. Dark and lovely, that's my mom. And then I have my mom's first cousin from Barbados. Man, she's so chocolate, fudge-like. I can't even, I'm making up words now. Viscosity, effervescence. My mom's first cousin on the side of the family from Barbados. Oh man, the chocolate darkness. So beautiful. Okay, boom. Let me give you a little 101. The dream of digging a water passage across the isthmus of Panama, uniting the Atlantic and Pacific Oceans, dates to the early 16th century and can be traced to the 1513 Isthmian crossing of Vasco Nunez del Balboa. He discovered, right, that only a narrow strip of land separated the two oceans. The Holy Roman Emperor Charles V, who was also Charles I of Spain, initiated a movement to build a passage across the isthmus. By decree issued in 1534, Charles ordered the Panama Regional Governor to survey a route to the Pacific following, I think it's the Chagres River, Chagres. This was the first survey for a proposed ship canal through Panama, and it more or less followed the course of the current Panama Canal. At the time the survey was completed, it was the governor's opinion that it would be impossible for anyone to accomplish such a feat. United States' interest in a canal to join the Atlantic and Pacific Oceans across the Central American Isthmus, not necessarily at Panama, awakened relatively late. The discovery of gold in California in 1848 created a tremendous volume of trans-isthmian business, mostly overland using the Panama Railroad as it was completed and came into use. An interest in a canal was heightened. The inauguration in 1869 of Ulysses S. Grant as the 18th U.S. president brought new impetus to U.S. canal policy. Grant's personal interest went back to July of 1852, when as an army captain he led the American 4th Infantry across the Isthmus of Panama en route to garrison duty in California. The military detachment of several hundred men together with their dependents became victims of a raging cholera epidemic in Panama that claimed the lives of 150 men, women, and children. Grant later wrote of the tragic incident. The horrors of the road in the rainy season are beyond description. In 1869, President Grant ordered survey expeditions to Central America. The expeditions were organized by Navigation Bureau Chief Commodore Daniel Ammen and were under the command of the Secretary of the Navy. Surveys were conducted in Tehuantepec, Mexico by Captain Roger W. Schufelt, in the Darien by Commander Thomas Oliver Selfridge, and in Nicaragua by Commander Chester Hatfield, Commander Edward P. Lowell, and Chief Civil Engineer Aniceto G. Menocal, and in Panama along the railroad line by Lowell and Menocal. The fine quality of these surveys is still recognized today. Interestingly, the route of the current Panama Canal is nearly identical to that proposed by this Panama survey. So I'm just making a point. You got to go back to the 19th century, really the 16th century, to get a real understanding of why Panama is so important, why it was a beachhead for the CIA, why that canal meant so much to business, and who funded it. Before the show's over today, I want to get into a little bit of how the Panama Canal was financed. So an Interoceanic Canal Commission was appointed by President Grant to evaluate the findings resulting from these Navy expeditions that took place between 1870 and 1875. A report was prepared by the commission, and following due consideration, the commission in 1876 came out in favor of the Nicaragua route. The U.S. Isthmian Canal Commission of 1899-1901, usually referred to as the Second Walker Commission, after its president, Rear Admiral John G. Walker, was following failure of the French canal effort. Now, the French tried to build a canal and failed. Okay, he ordered again study of all routes feasible to constructing a water route between the Atlantic and Pacific Oceans. The study was ordered by U.S. President William McKinley, who succeeded Grant in office. This time, the Panama and Nicaragua routes were to receive special consideration. The Nicaragua route, again, came out as the favorite choice, but not for long. Okay. Now, during this discussion at the Smithsonian Institute last Wednesday night, I was there.
I asked or axed. I axed. Did I say something wrong? I axed. Journalism professor John Dinges from Columbia University, he wrote a book called Our Man. I think it's Our Man in Panama. It's about Manuel Noriega. Okay, and the invasion. I asked him, because he had made a comment earlier saying that he did not believe the reason for the invasion of Panama was as much about the Panama Canal and the United States maintaining control over it as some people believe. He even called it a conspiracy theory. So I had an opportunity to ask a question in front of everybody. I asked him, why did he believe that? Now, let me give you some audio, give you some context. This is from WUNC, a discussion with Adam Clymer, who wrote a book. Adam Clymer was the New York Times journalist that Dick Cheney called a world-class a-hole. Remember that? Well, Adam Clymer wrote a book about the Panama Canal and the Reagan presidency and the Republican Party. Frank Stasio interviewed him. Does Dick Cheney's beef with Adam Clymer of the New York Times really go back to Panama rather than left-right, Republican-Democrat, liberal-conservative disagreement? This is what I mean by getting caught up in that stuff. Dick Cheney, way up, I would call him a fourth-tier member of the 10%, knows a lot more than most presidents do, from what I've researched. Let's get into this discussion on the Panama Canal. You all tell me what you think. Then I'll get to a statement Minister Farrakhan made about the Panama Canal and its importance. But this is from last year during the election, an interview as it related to North Carolina politics, the role of Jesse Helms and Ronald Reagan, and America's peculiar interest in the Panama Canal. A lot of money involved, but more.
I'm Frank Stasio. A week and a half ago, North Carolinians held a historic primary. It was the first time in decades that our state played a role in choosing a presidential nominee. When was the last time, you ask? Thanks for asking. Actually, it was 1976. And in that year, the big battle was on the Republican side. Ronald Reagan entered the North Carolina primary with five straight losses to incumbent President Gerald Ford.
Listen.
Talk about toast. But he galvanized Tar Heel voters around a single topic, the Panama Canal. Reagan won North Carolina, and although he ultimately lost the nomination to Ford, he did gain credibility as a national candidate, and he found an issue that would, in many ways, redefine American politics. Journalist Adam Clymer believes the canal question did more than just reinvigorate Ronald Reagan's career. He says it was the issue that fueled the rise of the conservative right. He's written a book about it called Drawing the Line at the Big Ditch, the Panama Canal Treaties and the Rise of the Right, and he joins us from a studio in Washington to tell us more about it. Adam Clymer, welcome to the program.
Good to be with you, Frank.
Let's start with a little background. Gerald Ford was president. He begins to advance negotiations for a new treaty with Panama, and at that time the U.S. had control of the canal, quote, in perpetuity. Why did Gerald Ford believe a new treaty was necessary?
Well, Ford, like Johnson and like Nixon before him and like Carter after him, believed that the canal would be more secure if Panama had a stake in its operations. Panama was restive, students were demonstrating, and the canal was a terribly vulnerable piece of engineering. The jungle all around, and mortars could have taken it out or sunk a ship in a set of locks fairly easily. So there was this concern about keeping it open, and the theory advanced by, as I say, three presidents before Carter actually did something about it, was that it would be safer if Panama had a stake.
And why was that? Because of the unrest and there had been demonstrations.
There had been demonstrations, there had been threats of sabotage, and it was physically vulnerable. Moreover, in Carter's case at least, there was a sense that there was something wrong with the arrangement to begin with, that we had extorted the in perpetuity clause out of a country that didn't exist until we assisted this revolution from Colombia in 1903.
Yeah, talk a little bit about that agreement and what was indeed in perpetuity, what wasn't, and you know, what was the treaty that had to be changed.
Well, the United States gained land on both sides of the canal, 10-mile strip, through the heart of Panama. You couldn't go from the north of it to the south of it without crossing United States occupied territory. And the treaty said that the United States would have control as if it were sovereign. which led people to think basically that it was a part of the United States. Certainly there were books written that said it was. As a strictly legal matter, it wasn't quite that, but even though Reagan and Helms argued that it was, the Supreme Court had decided otherwise, but that didn't basically matter a great deal. The United States ran it. United States workers on the canal lived well, good housing, a cheap commissary, and they were quite happy with the situation. The location of the zone blocked any sort of development in Panama City, the capital of Panama. And there were resentments of many different sorts, but basically this had been building up over many years since the war. The United States, after all, had been a champion of anti-colonialism, had pressured Britain and France to give up colonies and grant them independence, and that spirit was coming home to roost in Latin America.
So here's Ford now in the process of renegotiating this. Was it much of a political issue when he started that process?
He was afraid it would be, but because he had dealt with some of the people who were opposed to it while he was in the House. Dan Flood of Pennsylvania was a singular example. Flood proposed the impeachment of President Eisenhower on one occasion when he allowed the Panamanian flag to fly at a few places in the zone. Ford was aware of the opposition, I don't think necessarily of how intense it would become, but most of Ford's negotiating actually in 1975 was within the United States government, trying to get the Pentagon and the State Department lined up together on the issue. They succeeded in that, but then came about Labor Day, the Ford administration. He was going to run, and so was Ronald Reagan. That was clear at the time, and they decided to put the negotiations in a deep freeze, and Ford assured the government of Panama that he would resume it and reach a treaty once he was reelected. He wasn't.
And so that's what now enter Ronald Reagan and Jesse Helms and the confluence of those two political careers right here in North Carolina.
Well, Helms had been alert and paying attention to the issue for some time. In fact, it was Helms who in 1974 in October told Reagan about the latest set of negotiations. Reagan hadn't been aware of them. And Helms was deeply opposed to any surrendering of the canal, thought it would spread communist influence and just generally be a terrible thing. Reagan used the issue occasionally in 1975. He would bring it up from time to time in some of his radio broadcasts, at a few of the rallies when he started, but he never really focused on it hard. And concentrated his campaign around this. He had this wonderful slogan, which was, "We built it, we bought it, it's ours, and we're going to keep it," until he came to North Carolina. Now, his campaign was broke. The plane had bringing him to the North Carolina primary had to wait on the tarmac in Los Angeles until they were sure there was enough money in the till to pay for the charter. Nancy Reagan wanted him to drop out. That's a powerful influence.
Yeah.
But instead, he pressed the issue and surprised everyone, including himself, by winning in North Carolina.
Well, we have a clip of a speech that he made, a televised speech that he made in North Carolina, and it was a half-hour-long speech that may have helped turn the tide here in North Carolina. Let's listen.
Did you all know that? Speech. Big speech made by Ronald Reagan on the Panama Canal in North Carolina affected the election. Now listen carefully to what President Reagan says.
Some of that.
Torrijos is a friend and ally of Castro, and like him is pro-communist. He threatens sabotage and guerrilla attacks on our installations if we don't yield to his demands. Well, the canal zone is not a colonial possession. It is not a long-term lease. It is sovereign United States territory, every bit the same as Alaska and all the states that were carved from the Louisiana Purchase. We should end those negotiations and tell the general, we bought it, we paid for it, we built it, and we intend to keep it.
Of course, the general he refers to is the dictator of Panama at the time, Omar Torrijos. Go through that statement line by line and tell us how much of it was accurate.
Well, we did build it. We did pay for it, maybe at fire sale prices. We had just assisted a revolution against Colombia that created the country of Panama. It wasn't the sovereign United States territory. It was to be operated as if it were sovereign. It wasn't the same thing as Alaska or the states carved from the Louisiana Purchase. In those places, if anyone was born of foreign parents in Alaska, they were immediately U.S. citizens. If you were born of foreign parentage in Panama, you were not. I mean, we get into the argument these days, really on the edges, about McCain, who was born there. But he's certainly a United States citizen by any means. That part of it was inaccurate. But the speech was shown on all but one or two North Carolina television stations. It had actually been taped in Florida. They edited out a palm tree and wrote in a number to send contributions to. It had a terrific impact. Everybody who was going to vote in the Republican primary heard it. The Helms people pushed this. The American Conservative Union bought ads telling people to listen to it and to vote for Reagan to keep the canal. It was the dominant issue in that primary.
And set the context for us, because we're talking about the mid-1970s. We just lost the Vietnam War. Gas prices are soaring, food prices. So the question of American identity and American strength was an important one in those days.
Oh, I think it's essential. But I think you have to go back just a little bit further. I don't know to the degree to which it's common schoolboy experience these days. But I read through a lot of textbooks of the 20s and 30s and 40s and 50s. And the glorious achievement of creating the canal where Europe had failed, where they conquered jungle and disease, was a part of everybody's upbringing. This was a national monument, in effect. And I found it as stupendous when I saw it myself for the first time. So you take that element, and then the fact that we had lost a war to a small country in Asia, the idea of giving up something just to make nice to an even smaller country and one that we'd helped create, stuck in the craw of the American public. The public was never convinced that the treaties were a good idea, even after the Senate ratified them in 1978.
August 12, 2009, Cedric Muhammad Black Coffee Program. You were just listening to a snippet from the State of Things program, WUNC. This was in 2008 of last year. Frank Stasio, the host, interviewing Adam Clymer, who wrote a book on Panama Canal, some of the interest behind it. This is big time. Very important. December is the 20-year anniversary of the invasion of Panama. We'll spend more time on that. There was a secret meeting between John Poindexter, I think his name is John Poindexter, and Manuel Noriega. Noriega, we'll get into him later. Was he a CIA agent? Why was Panama such an important location for U.S. foreign policy interests? Could it be because left and right both had a home in Panama? It was the place that everyone came through. Was Noriega in the position to know what Castro was doing, as well as American allies? Is that what made him so important? Why hasn't Noriega, at any point yet, explained really the details of his relationship with the U.S. government? Why did he not testify at his own trial? That man knows a lot. Send in your comments if you care about this subject. Cuba's important. Puerto Rico's important. But when you're talking geopolitical, you cannot leave out Panama. Let me read this portion of the December 2001 letter that the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan wrote President George W. Bush. It says here, on September 17th, 1985, I had a vision-like experience where I was told of the secret plan of President Ronald Reagan, who had met with his Joint Chiefs of Staff in early September 1985 to plan a war. That's what I'm saying. Get the date right, folks. Follow what the minister's saying, the details. Joint Chiefs of Staff, September 85. Don't just repeat what he's saying. Understand what he is giving, and in the way of breadcrumbs, follow it. Do your own research. Let me repeat. The minister says, on September 17th, 1985, I had a vision-like experience where I was told of the secret plan of President Ronald Reagan,
who had met with his Joint Chiefs of Staff in early September 1985 to plan a war. I was not told whom the war was against, but within a few months it became clear to me that the war was against Libya and its leader Muammar Gaddafi. President Reagan, on coming into office, had as one of his aims the desire to get rid of Muammar Gaddafi and to place in the leadership of Libya a regime more favorable to America's foreign policy interests. The desire of President Reagan also concerned the planning of a war involving young black men here on the soil of America. This is what inspired me to tour the country talking to black men, urging them to stop killing one another. And this is what eventually led to the Million Man March on October 16, 1995. Another of President Reagan's desires was to make null and void the treaty that was signed by his predecessor, President Jimmy Carter, returning the Panama Canal to the Panamanian people by the year 2000. President Manuel Noriega of Panama was demonized by the press, tried in absentia, and found guilty of drug dealing. This was used as the justification for a violent action that was taken against Panama using the armed forces of America. However, the real aim was to place in Panama a government of America's choosing and to nullify the treaty signed by President Carter that gave the Panama Canal back to the Panamanian people. Dig into this. I don't want left, right. Please, stop it. I just want history, geopolitical, maneuvering, cultural factors. How were the indigenous people of Panama affected by this? What were the arguments inside of Panama regarding the canal? What did President Carter do that so upset other presidents or other people in the U.S. foreign policy establishment as related to handling the Panama Canal and the treaty? Was the real reason that Manuel Noriega was taken out of Panama, tried in absentia and found guilty of drug dealing and demonizing the press, were there other forces behind that in order to get America in a better position to control the Panama Canal? Is China a factor? Was China's interests and connections to Panama, some of them less known than most believe, was that a factor? Are some of these same factors at work in China and America's maneuvering in Africa? This is why I cannot just throw Juan Williams out. If Juan Williams wants to get into these issues as he did, you must understand there's some redeeming value there. Don't be a pawn for the Republican and Democratic Party when you're dealing with your own people. Make your own decision based upon your own enlightened self-interest, geopolitical worldview, universal law, human principles, human nature. Please, it's my plea. August 12th, 2009. Yes, I am the product of a Barbados-Jamaican merger that took place in Panama. August 12th, 2009, Cedric Muhammad Black Coffee Program. CedricMuhammad.com, BlackElectorate.com, BlackCoffeeChannel.com. Yeah, I know this is a little different because it hits a nuance or a nexus point that we're not used to thinking in terms of. We've been so trained to think in terms of reality, in terms of political worldviews, a left, a right, a center, that we don't understand the importance of finding the truth, maybe from anthropology, maybe from the world of economics, maybe from theology. But if you're a real scientist, you have to think outside of these narrow partisan constructs. Sometimes you got to go to Panama on them. You know what I mean? Yeah.
In the back streets of Panama City.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
whites walking in the shade.
No doubt.
I catch a glimpse of your reflection.
Not me.
And I don't know what to say.
I can see my mother dancing right now. How can they treat you so bad when you look so good in Panama?
I know I shouldn't say it, but I felt like I could.
Now, something I haven't really said too much about, maybe privately. I have a suspicion Barack Obama is a one-term president. I don't get the impression that he is pressed to accomplish certain things. I think if he can get through this healthcare thing, then he may turn this thing over to Hillary. Have any of you all thought about this? He doesn't seem somebody who thinks that missing, I guess, quality time with his daughters is worth, yeah, I said worth with an F, is worth, you know, is not worth, I would say, or the presidency is worth more than spending time with his daughters. That's the basic point. I think he's happy with what he's accomplished. He's made history. He can only go down from here. You know, in terms of his popularity, I think he understands that. An op-ed in yesterday's Financial Times got me thinking a little more about this politically. A runaway deficit may soon test Obama's luck. This is published in the Financial Times, written by Neil Ferguson. It says, President Obama reminds me of Felix the Cat. And before that, Neil Ferguson quotes, Felix the Cat, the wonderful cat. Whenever he gets in a fix, he reaches into his bag of tricks. President Barack Obama reminds me of Felix the Cat, one of the best-loved cartoon characters of the 1920s. Felix was not only black, he was also very, very lucky. And that pretty much sums up the 44th president of the United States as he takes a well-earned summer break after just over 6 months in the world's biggest and toughest job. His stimulus bill has clearly made a significant contribution to stabilizing the U.S. economy since its passage in February. His cap and trade bill to reduce carbon dioxide emissions passed the House of Representatives in June. He has set in motion significant overhauls of financial regulation and health care. Considering the magnitude of the economic crisis he inherited, his popularity is holding up well. His current 56% approval rating is significantly better than Bill Clinton's 44% at the same time in his first term, and about the same as George W. Bush's. I don't know where the F came from. Consider the evidence that the economy has passed the nadir of the Great Recession. Second quarter gross domestic product declined by only 1% compared with a drop of 6.4% in the first quarter. I want to know, is President Barack Obama a one-term president? In your view, have you thought about it? I think he should just bail out. I think the job is done. History's been made. Raise your daughters and fall back. Neil Ferguson writes, he says, credit where it is due. Although the gold medal for saving or staving off the depression goes to Ben Bernanke, the Federal Reserve Chairman, and the silver medal to China's leaders for their even more impressive stimulus, the president deserves at least a bronze. According to Moody's, the ratings agency, the stimulus package has saved more than 500,000 jobs. Without the jump in government spending, GDP would still be in a nosedive. In foreign policy, as in economic policy, this is a president who makes his own luck. His Cairo speech in June was a big success and has even been credited by some in the recent setbacks for Hezbollah in Lebanon and for President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad in Tehran, Iran. Although in truth, the crisis in Tehran has been a serious blow to the administration's strategy of negotiating with Iran. Felix the Prez is lucky in domestic politics too. After months of wrangling, Al Franken was finally confirmed as senator for Minnesota, giving the Democrats a potentially crucial margin of advantage in the upper house of Congress. To prove the point, the Senate last week voted by 68-31 to confirm the president's pick, Sonia Sotomayor, as the next Associate Justice of the Supreme Court. In the House of Representatives, Mr. Obama's party has a majority of 256-178, and best of all, the Republican Party has traded in Newt Gingrich's 1994 contract with America for a suicide pact with itself. Yet this might just be where the president's luck runs out. For precisely the power of his own party in Congress could prove to be a source of weakness rather than strength. On my most recent visit in Washington, I could not help being struck by the shift that has occurred from the imperial presidency of the Bush era to something like the parliamentary government under Mr. Obama. This president proposes, Congress disposes. It was Congress that wrote the stimulus bill and made sure it was stuffed full of political pork. It is Congress that will ensure the health care bill falls well short of being self-financing. Mr. Obama recently snapped at an unnamed blue dog conservative, leaning House Democrat, saying, "You're going to destroy my presidency." He could be right. According to the polls, voters disapprove of Congress by 61% to 31%. What's more, the two parties will be neck and neck if the midterm elections were held today. The reason is clear. While the stimulus package had a sound macroeconomic rationale, the growing structural imbalance between federal revenue and spending scares the hell out of voters. A recent USA Today Gallup poll showed that 59% of Americans think government spending is excessive. Mr. Obama receives his lowest approval ratings for his handling of the federal budget deficit. What do you all think? Is this going to be the undoing of our president? I think he's a one-term just because he wants to just get up out of Dodge. August 12, 2009. How to show in the diaspora, Cedric Muhammad Black Coffee Program. We'll be right back. Let me know if I'm off base here. Any thoughts on Panama? The invasion of Panama? The Panama Canal and the business interest it represents, let me know.
I'm not going anywhere. I'm going to be yours for a long, long time. Woo! Woo!
Got it?
Woo! Woo! Stop!
Yeah, you know what it is. Hour number two, the hottest show in the diaspora. I'll be right back. Jasiri X coming up in a little bit. Little Mike Tyson. I'm going to defend T.O. and his right to choose a Caucasian companion if he sees fit.
Cedric Muhammad.
Yeah.
Cedric Muhammad.
Cedric Muhammad and Black Coffee Program.